Well, good morning. Wow, you all responded. I'm Judge Allen, and to my right is Judge Jaquith, and we just, first on behalf of the court, I want to say thank you for the invitation to come out and hear oral argument here at the training seminar. We really appreciate it. We love to go around and hear oral argument. It's really an honor for us to be out here with the American Legion. This morning, we are convened to hear oral argument in the case of Charles R. Findley versus Dennis Veterans Affairs, case number 23-2078. Would counsel, beginning with appellant's counsel, enter your appearance for the record?
Robert Ronan Slater for the appellant Charles R. Findley, and with me is Brian Anderson.
Thank you very much, Secretary.
Ryan Harrison for the secretary, and seated to my right is Mark Hamill.
Good to see you both. And you are going to reserve some time for rebuttal?
Yes, Your Honor, 10 minutes.
10 minutes, we'll make that happen, and so you can begin when you're ready.
May it please the court. Mr. Findley is a legally blind veteran who has been receiving Chapter 11 compensation for bilateral visual impairment under Section 1160, known as the Paired Organ Statute. That statute recognizes that but for certain service-connected conditions, certain veterans would have substantially less functional impairment. Because of the difficulties his overall disability picture presents in his daily life, he is seeking a certificate of eligibility for specially adapted housing under Section 2101. We contend that under the best reading of the statutory language, Mr. Findley's bilateral visual impairment makes him eligible for specially adapted housing, even though his right eye was not injured in service. First, under Section 2101, a veteran is eligible if he is entitled to compensation under Chapter 11 for a service-connected disability. That phrasing indicates that the service-connected disability is one for which the veteran is entitled to Chapter 11 compensation. Mr. Findley is plainly entitled to compensation under Chapter 11 for his bilateral visual impairment in 2005. This language mirrors Section 1160's language, instructing the Secretary, in cases of paired organs, to assign and pay to the veteran the applicable rate of compensation under this chapter. Mr. Findley's entitlement to Chapter 11 compensation by virtue of 1160 is therefore a triggering event for his eligibility under 2101.
But doesn't Section 1160 specifically limit the paired organ rule to disability and death compensation under Chapter 11? How does it apply to adaptation of housing under Chapter 21?
So 1160 directs the Secretary to provide a paired organ veteran with compensation under Chapter 11. So that phrasing there, that's what entitles him to that Chapter 11 compensation. And 2101 uses that same language. It speaks about entitlement to compensation under Chapter 11. They both refer to Chapter 11 compensation. So the similarity in the language there is what creates the eligibility. 2101 also admittedly refers to a service-connected disability. A service-connected disability in the singular, which, as relevant here, must be due to blindness in both eyes. This reference to a single disability, which can result from pathology of multiple body parts, suggests that the proper inquiry is not whether a veteran has a service-connected left eye pathology plus service-connected right eye pathology, but rather whether he has an overall service-connected disability picture due to blindness in both eyes. And this interpretation, it's consistent with both case law and sort of the nature of paired organs generally. As articulated in the Federal Circuit in Saunders v. Wilkie, a disability refers to a veteran's present-day functional impairment. Mr. Findley, his present-day impairment is, and therefore his disability, is bilateral blindness. You know, in the simplest possible terms, he cannot see. That is his problem, and that is what presents the need for these housing adaptations he's seeking.
How do you square this interpretation of 1160 and 2101 with Alleman?
With Alleman. So Alleman is a that's an 1151 case. So that that case said that the entitlement to compensation as if service connected under 1151 is not an award of service connection. Right. So the difference between 1151 at issue in that case and 1160 in this case is that connection to service. 1160 necessarily has a service-connected component. The Federal Circuit's decision in Spicer v. McDonough is instructive on this point. Spicer tells us that issues of service connection, the standard for evaluating that is one of but-for causation. So here, Mr. Finley, in his situation, but for the injury he sustained to his left eye during his service, but for that injury, he would not have that overall level of functional impairness, his legal blindness that he has today. So that's kind of the distinction between 1151 and 1160.
You think that overrides the similarity of the as if service-connected language in both cases are not actually service-connected?
I do, and I think that is that speaks to the kind of the nature of paired organ disabilities generally, and when Congress was when it enacted the paired organ statute, its stated goal, this is a 1962 Senate report, it sought to compensate totally blind veterans who had that one eye injured and are blinded during service, regardless of when the second eye became blind, noting that the loss of the veteran's sight in one eye in service was a direct causative factor in such total blindness. So Congress is concerned with that level of total impairment, that total blindness. That's the problem that these veterans are faced with, right? And Mr. Finley's left eye injury, that's a direct causative factor in his legal blindness.
Well, it's an essential component of it, right? But it doesn't.
Is.
The blindness in the left eye doesn't cause blindness in the right.
Yes, but the question we're trying to answer here is what his disability is for purposes of 2101. And to answer that, we look, the disability, it is a functional impairment that he has, and that impairment bears a but-for causal relationship to service. We know that from the holding of Spicer. So that's that's how we link his impairment to service.
Could I just ask you, Mr. Slater, just assume with me for a second that we agree with you on your point, okay? What remedy would you have us impose? In other words, has the board done the necessary fact-finding that would allow us to reverse and direct that special housing eligibility be imposed? Or would we need to restrict it that because the board hadn't made any fact findings that are necessary? You understand what I'm asking?
Yes, I do, Your Honor. So we're seeking reversal and an award of the certificate of eligibility, and it's really just a natural, if you're agreeing with me on this point, the board doesn't need to find that he has So the necessary facts, I guess, for an award of specially adapted housing are whether a person would meet the visual acuity standards for bilateral blindness. And Mr. Finley necessarily meets those because of his entitlement to compensation under 1160. The visual acuity standards between the two statutes are identical. They're both eyes need to be 20 over 200 or worse. So the fact that he has that 1160 already applied to him says that he meets that.
And so, just to be clear, then your position is that the board or VA writ large somewhere in the process has made those findings such that if we agreed with you, we could say CER, record page blank for the visual acuity, so we don't have to worry about sort of a Tadlock, us making a factual determination that the board hadn't made yet.
Yes, Your Honor, that is correct. Yes.
Thanks.
So just to kind of sort of sum up his reason for eligibility here. So he has bilateral blindness. That is what he's suffering from. That condition, it bears a but-for causal relationship to his service injury. But for his left eye injury in service, he would not have that level of functional impairment, that legal blindness. And he is entitled to compensation under Chapter 11 for that disability. That is a natural consequence of the Parent Oregon statute that creates that entitlement. So he meets all of that eligibility requirement, so he should be eligible for that specially adapted housing.
Counsel, just to clarify here, in your view, Section 1160, is it a entitlement or eligibility kind of statute, or is it more just a rating kind of statute, telling someone how they should be rated?
It is an entitlement to Chapter 11 compensation is what 1160 does. I believe the VA regulation, the 3.383, even says entitlement criteria. So it refers to it as an entitlement.
And what does the statute say, though?
The statute uses the mandatory language: the Secretary shall assign and pay to the veteran the applicable rate of compensation under this chapter. Right. So therefore, he is entitled to that rate of compensation under this chapter.
Could you just as easily look at it as more of a rating provision?
I mean,
it says where a veteran has suffered, and then it lists the kind of visual impairment that he has. The Secretary shall assign and pay the veteran such and such rate of compensation. Does that seem to be more telling you how a veteran is going to be rated?
I believe it tells us what compensation he is entitled to. Right? They both these statutes, 1160 and 2101, they both deal with entitlement to Chapter 11 compensation. That language appears in both. How we're drawing the link there between the two.
Thank you.
Does that make sense? Yeah.
So now, Mr. Slater, assume that we disagree with you on your first argument here.
Okay.
First of all, let me say, if we agreed with you on the first argument, we wouldn't have to reach your alternative argument. Do you agree with that?
That's correct, Your Honor. Yeah, that would be mooted. He prevails on the statutory argument. Yeah.
And so just if you could spend just a moment on your alternative, your second argument.
Yes.
You seem to say that the VA made a factual finding that both were service-connected, and therefore that's binding. But isn't the determination about whether or not VA has in the past awarded service connection, leaving aside the Parent Oregon provision, I mean, isn't that sort of like an adjudicative determination that it is or it doesn't exist, as opposed to sort of a factual determination? You know, you served in the armed forces between date X and date Y?
So, Your Honor, the relevant language is favorable findings. And favorable findings are defined as a conclusion on a question of fact, so on one hand, but also application of law to facts. So this this finding that the AOJ made in January 2022, I think it falls under that latter definition of application of law to facts. So the law being the 2021 language about whether he has a this service connected disability or not to his actual disability.
But I mean, you'll agree that if you looked at each eye, I mean, because your second argument goes to the fact that forget about the paired organ statute, right? That's basically,
right.
You don't say it that way, but that's what you're saying.
I understand.
You say the finding that was made is that he is entitled to service connection for both his right and his left eye, right? But it seems to me your brief pretty much acknowledges that's actually not the state of the world, right? I mean, the only reason you get service connection for, I'm getting his eyes confused, his left eye, I think, is because of the paired organ rule, right?
Right.
And so, but you're basically saying because there was what seems like just a shorthand reference in the one of the decisions, we're now going to pretend that for all time he doesn't need the paired organ and the left is favorably determined to be service connection?
So I think what happened here is, you know, when the RO issues its decision, it's required by stat. It has, I think, seven requirements for its decisions under the AMA. And part four, it has to identify favorable findings. And that's what it did. It's the favorable findings that we're referencing. They appear right there at the bottom, right under our heading, favorable findings. Here they are. So it did what it was supposed to do, format-wise, at least. And that signals to the board and any future adjudication, this is kind of the state of play. This is what's binding. The board then, when it sees that, what it should do if it doesn't feel that it should be bound by that, there's something wrong with it. It's under the affirmative obligation to rebut that finding with evidence of a clear and unmistakable error. It's a high standard to meet. You know, it's an error that reasonable minds could not differ.
So if we went along your second path, should we remand for the board to do what it seems to me your brief suggests could pretty directly be done, which is this was a clear and obvious mistake, and then we end up back here at the American Legion 2 years from now at their next training event to hear the argument?
That would not be what we were asking, but so the court, and this I'm kind of taking a remedy from a recent memorandum decision. It was Schuerman v. McDonough in July of this year, where the court reversed based on the board's failure to rebut a finding with a clear and unmistakable error. That case, the finding had to do with the effective date of the claim. And it analogized this situation to a kind of a presumption of soundness finding from, like, in Horn v. Shinseki, where it's the board's burden at that point to rebut the favorable finding, it bears that burden of persuasion. The memorandum decision held that it would be unseemly to merely remand just to give the board another chance to carry that burden. So reversal is a possibility here. the alternative is remand, as you were suggesting. And I don't want to say that this omission by the board is harmless per se. I think the system that Congress has created with the AMA, where you know it acknowledges that the AOJ will make certain favorable findings that can only be rebutted by clear and unmistakable error, that kind of implies that there's a certain, I guess, lesser degree of error that's deemed acceptable for the new AMA system. Like it's a sort of a trade-off, I guess, for the increased clarity and consistency and efficiency that the AMA seeks to provide. So in a remand situation, the board would have to address whether it meets that high, clear, and unmistakable error standard, or if it is sort of a lesser error, which would then kind of trigger it being bound by that finding, if that makes sense. And I see my time is tricking down to zero here, so I will, if there are no more questions, I can leave it there for a rebuttal.
Thank you. We'll give you your full rebuttal time.
Okay. Thank you, Your Honor.
Mr. Harrison?
Good morning, Your Honors. May it please the Court. The Court should affirm the Board's denial of a certificate of eligibility to specially adapted housing for two reasons. First, the plain language and the statutory structure of Section 2101, the SAH eligibility statute, establishes and the legislative history confirms that Congress did not provide eligibility to specially adapted housing for veterans receiving compensation as if their paired organ were service-connected. And second, the language and structure of the paired organ statute, Section 1160, similarly does not extend eligibility to SAH benefits. Now, I'd like to start off with taking a step back and looking at the text and structure of the specially adapted housing statute, because I think that's really the crux of this. It's a statutory interpretation case. The claim here is going to live or die based on this court's interpretation of the statutes. So if we're looking at the statute, right off the bat, Section A1, at the outset, Congress defines the benefit and, right off the bat, narrows eligibility to a certain class of veterans. This is in A1. The Secretary may assist a disabled veteran, described in paragraph 2, in acquiring suitable housing, etc. So the first question becomes, which veterans? It defines that class in A2. A2A tells us which veterans. There are two classes here. Romanet 2 is a group of post-9/11 veterans, not at issue in this case. What is at issue is Romanet 1. That defines the relevant category of qualifying veterans as one who is entitled to compensation under Chapter 11 of this title for a service-connected disability that meets any of the criteria described in subparagraph B. So here we've got the requirement that one be receiving compensation under Chapter 11, and that has to be for a service-connected disability, and then that operative noun there, service-connected disability, is followed by that meets any of the criteria described in subparagraph B.
So, but doesn't, I mean, Mr. Findley is entitled to compensation under Chapter 11 of this title, right?
Yes.
Right? And the only reason he's entitled to disability compensation under Chapter 11 is because he actually does have a service-connected disability, right?
Yes. He does.
Okay, so then the paired organ statute says if you have a service-connected disability, then, I'm sticking with the I, there are others, right? Then with the paired organ that has a deficiency, we're going to treat that as if it was also going to be service-connected, and it says impose, or, you know, assign a rate of compensation, right? But it's all because there actually is a real, honest-to-God, service-connected disability, in this case, the right eye. So why does this statute then, the 2101, why do you say it clearly says that he doesn't get the benefit?
So two reasons, Your Honor. First, it's the significance of that restrictive clause following the service-connected disability. So the following criteria in subparagraph B, the relevant one here being the permanent disability due to blindness in both eyes, that is the essential meaning for what defines what the service-connected disability means. So the operative noun there, it must be service connection. The disability is due to blindness in both eyes. That is not shown in the facts here.
So the whole notion of specially adapted housing, right, you tell me if this sort of colloquial idea is right, is a veteran has something wrong with him or her, and it's a special type of something wrong. And what we're going to do is we're going to say we realize then that in order to really function in your home, you might need help making the home different. Does that basically fit with what you mean?
Yes. Yes, Your Honor. That's how I understand it as well.
Okay. So then the Secretary's position, it seems to me, leads to a rather bizarre result. It says you actually have a service-connected blindness in one eye. And honest to God, I was, you know, got hit with shrapnel, whatever. I service connected in one eye. You have the congressional paired organ rule, which says if you're blind in the other eye, by colloquialism, right? If you meet the visual acuity standards in the other eye, we're going to treat it as if you're service connected for both, right? The idea Congress seems to be recognizing is you're now totally blind. And yet the Secretary's position is, but in that veteran's situation, we won't help that veteran be able to make their house able to live, even though one eye is service-connected and the other is treated as if it's service-connected. But we won't fix your house.
Your Honor, based on the statutory tools that we have available, yes, I believe that is the best interpretation of the statute.
Why in the world would Congress adopt the paired organ rule and then say, but when it comes to making sure that you're not going to fall and trip in your house with both your eyes being blind, we're not going to let you do that. I mean, that seems like a totally strange thing for Congress to have done.
Strange, perhaps, but I think the scope, the narrow scope of the statute is evident in the plain text of 1160, right? So 1160 operates as an exception to the general rule. The general rule being that for any given disability to receive compensation, generally, must be service-connected. And yes, there are various exceptions to that, one of them being 1160 for a paired organ. And Congress created an exception to that. But it's an exceedingly narrow exception in that it only expressly provides for compensation under this chapter being Chapter 11 of Title 38. That's the only enumerated chapter reflected in the provision. So it is an exception to the general rule. What appellant's counsel is seeking to do here is to create an exception to the exception, and that's generally not how statutes should be interpreted. For example, this court's recent decision in Burkhart, which was then affirmed on appeal, looked at sort of similar language as if service connection there in the 1151 context rather than in the paired organ context. But same sort of legal fiction that's created by operation of the statute.
As Judge Allen pointed out earlier, in 1151, there is no service-connected disability. The entirety of the disability is as if service-connected. Actually, nothing is really service-connected. But under the paired organs rule, you have kind of like a half-half in this veteran's case. You have a service-connected disability in one eye, and then VA allowing that because you have that and you also have total blindness or you meet the statutory requirements otherwise, then the entire thing will be considered service-connected. So there's a big distinction between all the 1151 cases and this kind of case. Arguably.
Your Honor, I recognize the distinction. I think I dispute the significance of that distinction. So, yes, Section 1160 involves inherently, it must involve one service-connected disability and one non-service-connected disability. But the overlap between 1151 and 1160 is that the operation of that legal fiction, whether it involves the service-connected disability or not, is that it provides for additional benefits that are enumerated in the statute. So in 1151, it's Chapter 11 benefits, it's 13, it's, you know, Congress added 21 and 39 to that. With 1160, the legal fiction only operates to provide additional compensation under Chapter 11. SAH eligibility, or SAH, the certificate of eligibility, the grants, those are Chapter 21 benefits. And that distinction is significant. And that's the sort of statutory reasoning that this court relied on in Burkhardt, noting, okay, Congress expressly chose to enumerate to certain sections to provide additional benefits in this limited exception to the service connection rule. What this court said we will not do is to assume the inverse, that Congress extended benefits, this was to 1151 beneficiaries, unless it manifests an express intent to exclude them. Congress didn't need to expressly exclude the Chapter 21 benefits from 1160 beneficiaries. What is clear is what is enumerated in the chapter, or in the statute of 1160, and that's what should be given effect here. So that's what, at least we're looking at the text and the structure here. But I think just as revealing is if we look further and clarify or confirm that meaning, as this court used in LASIK, looking to the legislative history, see if there's an interplay between the statutes.
Judge Allen's earlier point, this is not a circumstance where the what's at issue is some incremental worsening of a service member's disability. The service-connected blindness makes the service member blind and in need of the specially adapted housing. Isn't that what Congress contemplated?
No, Your Honor. Well, let me rephrase. Generally, yes. That is like the intended purpose of the specially adapted housing, but there are clear limitations to that, and we can't overlook that. And so as it's applied to the facts of this case, the answer would be no. That's not what Congress intended.
If the language of Section 2101 and 1160 is so plain, why did the board struggle with it in this case?
Well, Your Honor, I think, to the extent the board struggled with it, I think the board arrived at the correct interpretation of the statutes. That's consistent with VA's interpretation.
But you can't even get off the first page without reading that the board's conclusion of law is that the criteria for SAH have been met.
So, Your Honor, while I would maintain that it is clear, even if you're not persuaded by that, and, I mean, there is certainly some case law to that extent that courts have not always seen it so clearly, I do think that we can look to the legislative history to confirm or clarify what Congress did intend here. And when we're looking at that sort of analysis, let's look at Kilpatrick, for example, looking at, even though 1151 enumerated benefits to Chapters 11 and 13 facially limited those benefits in that context. Nonetheless, the court found...
Kilpatrick talks about a special relationship between the malpractice disabilities in 1151 and adaptive housing.
I think that special relationship comes from the fact that Congress previously enumerated entitlement to that benefit in the predecessor to 1151. It said, you know, as if service connected, you know, for disabilities, you know, resulting from VA treatment. I believe it said provides benefits under sections.
Yeah, but that's easy to argue the other way. If they're in the same statute and then you split them out in two different statutes, maybe that was what was intended. So it may be more than that that we're talking about here. The relationship may be the actual factual relationship between the disability and the need,
well,
the one that exists in this case.
Your Honor, I think Congress or the court in Kilpatrick found that the separation was unintended there by confirming that fact that, you know, one, recodification statutes aren't generally presumed to make substantive changes in the law, and two, looked at a wealth of congressional statements of clear expressions of intent that the recodification was not supposed to deprive previously available benefits. But when we apply that sort of framework, the same sort of framework that's applied in Alman and Burkhart to the facts of this case, there is no persuasive overlap between the two statutes to evidence a congressional intent.
Now, counsel, as to congressional intent, especially under 1160, I believe that in Appellant's reply brief, he raised this Senate report, language from the Senate report, 87-1845. And so that does have some interesting language. He mentioned it in the reply you haven't yet, you know, touched on, so I'm just wondering your thoughts on that. And I would note that that report says, as the report noted, the impairment caused by bilateral blindness was the same, whether the second eye blindness was attributable to service or not. In each case, the loss of a veteran's sight in one eye in service was a direct causative factor in such total blindness.
Your Honor, so looking to that statement is in footnote 5 on page 10 of the reply brief. There, all that Appellant's counsel was able to come up with is a singular congressional statement, right? But let's take it at face value. Let's say that there's a congressional intent to equate the sort of the paired organ that's not service-connected as if it were service-connected. That's at least effectuated in the terms of the statute. What is not expressed in that statement or in the statute is any intent to extend the benefit to additional ancillary benefits beyond what is enumerated in 1160. So that one singular statement of congressional intent, it reflects an intent to set that paired organ on equal footing, but what end? To what scope?
Well, I was asking Appellant's counsel the question about whether 1160 is more of a rating type statute, giving a special role for rating in certain situations, as opposed to a entitlement type statute. So what are your thoughts on that? Because that kind of goes to what you were just saying.
I think that that is accurate, Your Honor, because if we look at like what can be provided by the plain terms of the statute, you know, providing the ancillary benefits under Chapter 11, that has certainly been the case by virtue of the paired organ here, right? Appellant has received entitlement to TDIU, has received entitlement to special monthly compensation. So in that sense, it does operate as sort of providing additional compensation by way of how the service-connected disability is evaluated. What it does not do, however, is provide ancillary benefits beyond what is enumerated in the statute.
Well, why would it, though, if it's a simple rating provision? It's a special rule for people who have a special rating rule for people who have certain types of disabilities. Like, why would it go into what else you're entitled to? It's just talking about rating in these certain situations.
Your Honor, if you're looking for like a policy reason why it wouldn't, I don't know if I can really speak to that. I think that what I can speak to, however, is that we have to give operative effect to what is enumerated. And to assume the inverse, that like silence doesn't mean that it's prohibited, I don't think that that is how the court has interpreted the sort of as-if legal fiction in the past. And I don't think that it would be warranted in this case either.
Well, why not? I mean, you know, Section 1151 has, I'm somewhat familiar with the Burkhart case, and so, that has some ways to look at 1151 by saying, you know, Congress decided to put in certain things to get, which suggests that maybe it wasn't starting with the default position of you get it all, right? And so, I mean, didn't we, like, in Kimberlin versus Brown, I mean, with respect to DEA benefits, That was Chapter 35.
Yes, Your Honor. So I'll take your question in two parts. First, when discussing Burkhardt, at least, when we're looking at what's not in the statute, I think this court, as well as the Federal Circuit, made the point that what strongly supports the conclusion is that Congress acted, after Kilpatrick at least, to modify the statute to enumerate additional ancillary benefits for the 1151 beneficiaries. The Federal Circuit made the same point in a footnote two. Bolstering their conclusion is that Congress amended 1151 and, to provide some benefits, but not others. 1160 has not been modified to provide the additional benefits, but it's the same sort of issue as what was created in Kilpatrick. But to get to your other question about Kimberlin, I recognize at least the facial conflict that Kimberlin creates here. There, the issue being entitlement to DEA benefits. The veteran there had service connection for right ear deafness and received additional compensation for the non-service connected left ear by way of the paired organ statute, but it wasn't clear whether the paired organ statute or the aggravation statute 1131 gave rise to that total rating. And the court said, doesn't matter. This is like a three-paragraph decision, so there's not a ton of reasoning behind it. But the court sort of relied on this, what I think appellant's counsel calls as a but-for test. So the Section 3501 requiring a total disability, permanent in nature, the court said if you have, you wouldn't have that requirement would be satisfied but for the service-connected condition. Right? And I think the problem with that is that, if this court does see that as a conflict, I'll note that no other court that has, or no other decision, looking at Allman, Burkhardt, Mintz, Kilpatrick, that has interpreted this sort of as if, to the extent that Kimberlin assumes as if is sufficient in that purpose, which isn't totally clear, but let's assume it is. No other court has followed that reasoning.
Well, but most of the cases have been 1151 cases, right? The thing that seems important about Kimberlin, to me, is just speaking for myself, is it's an 1160 case. It's a paired organ case, and it says, that you can get an ancillary benefit, right? I mean, it may not be tremendous. We could even assume for a moment that it's wrong, but it does seem to me it binds us to reject sort of the top-line position you're saying, which is that you don't get anything with the paired organ statute that, doesn't start with 11, right? Because it's 3501. And we can't just reject that.
Your Honor, I don't think this court needs to, reject or overrule it. I will say...
Well, we can't overrule it.
Fair.
I mean, unless you want us to go on bonk, and please don't ask for that.
I will not submit a motion to that end, Your Honor. No, but I do think it is telling that none of the 1151 cases have even referenced Kimberlin, right? They have sort of sidestepped the issue, and I can't really think of any...
Why is that? I don't understand why that's again, I mean, I do have familiarity with Burkhardt, and it's just 1151 is like its own animal, sort of what... Judge Bartley was saying, it's different because there is no service connection at all in 1151. And the whole notion of the paired organ rule is that there is something that is honest to God, service connected, and we're going to sweep something else in that is so connected with it. That seems to me a major difference, but the fact that something didn't cite Kimberlin later, I don't understand why that undermines why Kimberlin is a binding precedent.
Your Honor, I don't think it undermines the precedential value of the opinion, but I do think that it makes it distinguishable for three reasons. First, there can be differences between 1151 and 1160, but there is a critical overlap between the two, and that is the legal fiction created by as-if service connection. I don't see any persuasive reason why the court would need to apply a different judicial methodology to assessing 1151 claims to 1160, like the scope of the ancillary benefits provided by that. Second, Kimberlin at least makes the reference to a flawed interpretation of compensation under 10113. We can debate the significance of that, but it's pretty clear in saying, even assuming there can be any compensable rating attributed to a non-service-connected disability, a questionable assumption in view of 10113 found such would be in conflict with the plain meaning of 3501. So 3501 is the dispositive statute in the outcome of that case. The text of 1160 is not even reflected in the reasoning of the court's decision there. Right, so that's another reason to find that distinguishable. And also, that interpretation of a 10113 was rejected in Ellman in 2003 by the Federal Circuit, and that sort of reasoning has been reiterated in terms of like what constitutes a service-connected disability in Ellman, Burkhardt, and Mintz. Yes, those are 1151 cases, but the point of that is that as if service connection does not operate to make it a service-connected disability. The same would be here, because we have to consider in the facts of this case that the issue is whether the bilateral visual impairment like becomes the service-connected disability by operation of 1160.
But doesn't the
Doesn't
the degree of granular specificity in the blindness portion of 2101 indicate that if Congress had intended to require that the level of blindness in each eye be service-connected, it would have said so? Wouldn't it have been easy to write 2101A2B 2I to require that the permanent disability is due to service-connected blindness in both eyes?
Your Honor, I can think of many reasons to better word a statute, but what we're looking for here is the best interpretation. And what we submit here is that the best interpretation is by looking at how the statute logically flows. And necessarily, B2 here, the permanent disability due to blindness in both eyes, must be service-connected. That's the way that the statute flows. The Congress chose to use the word that, making the dependent or the restrictive clause that provides the essential meaning to the term service-connected. So at least in the context of 2101, I think that is clear that what Congress intended to do, that by defining service-connected disability as being something that qualifies, you know, or that meets the subsequent criteria, it carries that definition all the way down through and funnels through the text and the structure of the statute to provide meaning to the criteria.
But as has been repeatedly said and is conceded, the veteran had a service-connected disability.
Yes, Your Honor. He is service-connected.
And it was characterized as bilateral blindness something like eight times by official VA adjudicative representatives, not scriveners or administrative professionals, as the Secretary likes to call them.
Your Honor, how the disability has been characterized, I will say, at least in the context of 1160 and like what the how that statute operates, the paired organ, saying that you're receiving compensation for bilateral visual impairment, that's at least the accurate way to frame what the source of the rating is. But that does not extend or carry over to provide another ancillary benefit just because it was, you know, how it's properly defined to receive additional Chapter 11 compensation. It doesn't operate to also make it a service-connected disability throughout all of VA benefits law. It's only within the narrow confines of Chapter 11 compensation that is workable. So, however,
well, but it's not, because it also applies to DEA benefits.
It does.
So then your logic, the Secretary's logic, is that Congress decided that it would provide dependent educational assistance to people through the paired organ route, but won't allow them to fix their house so they don't fall and hurt themselves through specially adapted housing?
Yes. Yes, Your Honor. I believe that is the case. Why else would Congress amend 1151 to enumerate the ancillary benefit to Chapter 35, but not amend 1160 to provide the ancillary benefit of Chapter 21? That we must give effect to these legislative choices, and we can't infer an intent from the silence there. We have to infer...
But isn't it going back to the point that I think all three of us have made, which is that 1151 creates out of whole cloth something to pretend that is service-connected that has no connection to service, but we're going to treat it as such, as opposed to 1160, where by definition, if 1160 operates in the eye category, one of your eyes has been damaged because of service. That seems like a big difference between the two.
I recognize the distinction. I don't think that it is as significant to the outcome, maybe as my friends on the other side of the aisle see here. I think the statute is clear in that both eyes have to be service-connected, but even if you're not buying the structure or the text of the statute, the legislative history surely compels that result. And I don't see any persuasive reason offered by opposing counsel here for why a different methodology should be applied for 1160 beneficiaries than 1151 beneficiaries. Text, structure, legislative history. Applying those traditional tools, I think the result is pretty clear here, especially where Congress has not made efforts to amend the statutes subsequent to decisions like Kimberlin extending the ancillary benefit, even if it's not found in the statute.
Well, but why would Congress feel like it needed to do anything after Kimberlin if Kimberlin got the basic notion right that you can get a benefit that doesn't start with Chapter 11 because of the paired organ rule? Well, if we're pretending that Congress reads all of our decisions really closely, then it would seem to me Congress would sit down and say, "Well, looking good, don't have to do anything on this one."
I think the legislative history demonstrates exactly the opposite of that, Your Honor. Because Congress did act subsequent to Kimberlin to amend the statute to specifically enumerate the DEA benefits, and so did VA. It amended 3.807 to expand the scope of what service connection means in the context of DEA benefits. So there is at least remedial statutory and regulatory action that happened subsequent to those decisions, but they did not make the same sort of changes.
But there's a ready explanation for that. Been discussing it, which is there's a complete disconnect between 1151 and service connection that doesn't exist with respect to 1160 and 2101.
Your Honor,
in the case of blindness, it's a pretty pivotal problem. You lose the service-connected loss of sight in your eye when you have a compromised visual acuity in the other. Makes you blind and in need of SAH.
Your Honor, if I may briefly answer your question.
No, you can definitely answer the question. I'll have our staff put 2 more minutes on the clock, and you can answer questions for as long as the judges have questions.
Thank you. Your Honor, I don't think that the fact that one is, service-connected, I don't think that that's a persuasive justification for departing from the methodology that's been established by this court, affirmed by the Federal Circuit in cases spanning over almost 20 years now, for looking at the as-if sort of operative function of a legal fiction. It's the same result, that Congress found it necessary to create a legal fiction to provide ancillary benefits in some certain limited circumstances, but clearly did not see it fit, for whatever reasons, to not provide the benefit in other reasons. I think that that's why that methodology should prevail, because it is clear what Congress's intent was. That's far easier to surmise based on the record that we have here in the legislative history than it is to assume the inverse.
Well, the board and the RO certainly had a hard time figuring that out.
Your Honor, to that point, I think we can all acknowledge the paired organ statute, it's a complicated business, the as-if service connection. But I think that how it is characterized, again, it is accurate to the extent that that's how he receives additional compensation. And it can't be said that appellant wasn't on notice of the fact that his right eye was not service-connected. Service connection was denied for that disability in 2005, but the 2003, 2005, 2006, 2007, 2009, 2 in 2010, 2014, and 22 all explicitly mention in one way or another the paired organ or non-service-connected right eye. There's a notice there that the paired organ statute does not operate to provide the benefits for specially adapted housing.
And yet, eight times, the ROs characterized the veteran's disability as bilateral blindness, his service-connected, not just his disability, his service-connected disability as bilateral blindness, including in the last two rating decisions, as specific favorable findings.
Your Honor, I recognize that. I do, and I understand the fine line that I am drawing here. But I think it's consistent with the statute, on the scope of the statute, on what that actually means. I think it's adequately explained in those decisions. And Allman, Mintz, those cases make clear that it's as if service connection, that legal fiction there, does not operate to confer the status of service connection. However it's phrased for the purposes of compensation, it does not confer the status of legal service connection as defined by statute.
I'll just point out one thing. You've been talking about as if service connection, but there is a language distinction between 1151 and 1160, because 1160 says the secretary, if you have this particular disability, the secretary shall assign and pay to the veteran the applicable rate of compensation under this chapter as if, and it doesn't say as if it's service-connected, it's as if the combination of disabilities, which includes service-connected and non-service-connected, were the result of service-connected disability. So there's a fine, you're talking about drawing fine lines, but the way you're characterizing this is not quite accurate in my view. This is a little more nuanced under 1160 than under 1151, as we've discussed.
Sure, Your Honor. I take your point. If I may briefly answer, I understand the nuance you're drawing there, as if the combination of disabilities were the result of service connection. And that's fitting in the sense of, you know, the scope of the statute. We're considering the combination of the service-connected and non-service-connected, as if both, like, the combination of the disability were service-connected for the purpose of receiving additional compensation under Chapter 11. That makes sense to combine the two in that sense, like the combination of them, not just one disability being as if, because it's for evaluative purposes. He receives a higher rating and additional benefits by way of that very nuanced language there, but it's still cabined to the ancillary benefit being Chapter 11. And that has been provided here by treating the combination of disabilities as if they're service-connected for that limited purpose.
The statutory interpretation question here is really important, obviously. But regardless of how that resolves, doesn't Mr. Findley win because of the binding nature of the favorable findings?
No, Your Honor. I don't see it that way. How the disabilities characterized...
Has the Secretary even tried to show that there was clear and unmistakable error in those findings?
Your Honor, that's not... No, it is not reflected in the Board decision in an analysis of... looking for clear and unmistakable findings or error as to that favorable finding. But the favorable finding there is, like, it applies not as a blanket, conferral of service connection. It's limited to the scope of the statute. It can't be broader than that. You know, it's considered the bilateral visual impairment for those Chapter 11 compensation purposes. No broader, no less than that.
Well, listen, I'm in my questions to your friend on the other side, I suggested some skepticism about whether this is the type of finding Congress was talking about. But what you just said is not what was said below, right? It was much more nuanced, right? And so if we're going to just say this is a finding, or say something like, we can't even review whether it's a favorable finding because the agency below determined that it was, called it a favorable finding. This just seems like a really bad case for the Secretary to be stomping his foot on that point, because this could really spin badly for you, because it said that he is service-connected for bilateral blindness. And if we say that's been designated as a favorable finding, the board didn't rebut it, and we can't review whether it's a favorable finding, because saying it's a favorable finding is itself favorable, and we don't have jurisdiction to review that. I don't know. That's just, I don't know if the secretary's considered any of that in the fine line drawing position you're taking today.
Your Honor, I think if the court were to want to find a way to give effect to that, I think that that would be a sort of off-ramp here to avoid the statutory question. I do maintain, though, that the statutory question here compels the outcome. And so even if remand were, if this court were to find that the favorable finding means what some interpret it to mean, I don't see how that's going to change the outcome on remand, given that there's a legal bar to the benefit sought here.
Well, if we said that the finding that says that he is bilaterally service-connected for blindness means that regardless of the state of the world, he is bilaterally service-connected for blindness, he wins, right?
Yes, Your Honor, I believe in that sense, perhaps.
Well, no, I mean, you agree with me that if somebody was service-connected for the right eye and service-connected for the left eye because an IUD exploded and they were blind, you would agree with me they would be entitled to a certificate of eligibility for specially adapted housing, right?
Yes, Your Honor.
Right, because you would never need the Parrot Oregon statute.
That's correct, Your Honor.
And if we take the favorable finding that Judge Jakewith said, read, which is he is service-connected bilaterally for blindness, and we say that means what it says, then Mr. Findley wins on that basis, right?
That is correct, Your Honor. I acknowledge that. I would maintain that I don't think that these are the facts to do that with. I think, you know, if you look at Allman, a similar situation presented, and I acknowledge that's pre-AMA, but there's also an error in how the there was an error in how the RO characterized the disability, and they framed it as being service-connected. And the court said, well, obviously it's not service-connected, right? Like, that was an 1151 issue, service.
Could we do that under the AMA if the RO says, I'm making this finding, the board doesn't go through the Q analysis? Are you saying the court could do that?
Your Honor, I think it could in this case if we're looking at the decision as a whole, because it's very clear from the decision as a whole that the right eye is not service-connected. The Parrot Oregon statute is the operative statute that gives the increased compensation, and explicitly that the Parrot Oregon statute does not provide eligibility. So the basis is there in the rating decision to infer what is meant by that statement about bilateral visual impairment, but I do recognize that if this court is not persuaded by that, that that could be a potential off-ramp here.
Well, thank you, Mr. Harrison.
Thank you for your time.
Mr. Slater, we'll give you your full 10 minutes. You can take more if you need it, but you shouldn't feel compelled to do that.
Yes, Your Honor. we'll see how long it goes here. I want to talk about the Secretary's reliance on the reference to Chapter 11 benefits specifically in 1160. And I think, as the courts noted, that rationale didn't really hold up in Kimberlin, where it found that DEA benefits, Parrot Oregon veterans were eligible for that. But another issue there is, that's only really looking at half the equation. We also have to look at the language of 2101. Even in Burkhart, as the Secretary cites, it acknowledges the analysis. It needs to go into the language of the ancillary benefit statute itself. It acknowledges, as an 1151 case, it said that 1151 is just sort of the baseline, and the text of the ancillary benefit statute can confer its benefits on a 1151 veteran, like someone who is entitled to that compensation under that statute. Like similar here, we looked at the language of 2101, which states that he is entitled to compensation under Chapter 11. That is an eligibility requirement under 2101, which is, the language is very similar to that entitlement to Chapter 11 compensation that exists by virtue of 1160. That language of 2101 has also been interpreted broadly in the natural holding of Kilpatrick. It found that that language was inclusive of 1151 even, which is not a service-connected disability. And Burkhart acknowledges that the language of 2101, it cited to Kilpatrick in his decision, it acknowledged that that language necessarily casts a wider net than the language of the ancillary benefit statute at issue in that case, which was the 3701, and that is why it came to a different conclusion that 1151 vets were not eligible. I also want to discuss the Secretary asserts that the legislative history of the two statutes do not support a link. And he relies on the Kilpatrick decision, which noted the shared history between 1151 and 2101. What Kilpatrick didn't hold was that a lack of shared history was conclusive in the opposite direction. Kilpatrick went through the legislative history thoroughly and acknowledged case law from the Supreme Court that said that the legislative history needs to show the will of Congress with sufficient clarity in order to determine the meaning of an unclear statute. And that existed in 1151, but mere silence about any interaction with 1160, that's not the same thing. That's not the same clarity that Congress meant to exclude paired organ veterans from specially adapted housing. Also want to discuss, with that legislative history, I would also note that, at the time the paired organ statute was enacted in 1962, per Kilpatrick, 2101 was applied to as-if service connection. So even if this is an as-if service connection situation, if Congress used that language again, it sort of, in a way, kind of borrowed that language from 1151. So any sort of shared history could, in a way, be somewhat derivative of the shared history of 1151 and 2101. I also want to note the Kimberlin decision and emphasize a couple more things there. I want to kind of clear up what the holding actually was. I know in Kimberlin, the counsel is correct, it's a pretty short decision. And there was some sort of discrepancy about whether the veteran in that case was actually a paired organ veteran or not. But the court made its decision assuming that he was rated under the paired organ statute, so its holding applies to the paired organ statute. It also made a reference about the definition of compensation, and it expressed that maybe compensation necessarily means service connection, which is a flawed interpretation per Alleman, but it expressed that as sort of a dicta kind of assertion. It assumed that compensation could exist for non-service connected conditions. So it actually applied the correct definition as articulated in Alleman, even if though it expressed misgivings about it. So its holding is in accordance with the law and should be followed here. That case also addressed the OGC precedent opinion 7590, which was the basis for the Secretary's position in that case, and also the basis for the Secretary's position in this case. You know, that opinion dealt with eligibility for paired organ veterans for various statutes that included DEA, that included specially adapted housing. And when it did so, it acknowledged that both of those statutes, they have this service connection requirement in them, 2101 and 3501, and it was their opinion that 1160 did not create that service connection. Their opinion, not mine, to be clear. But Kimberlin necessarily held that rationale didn't hold up. And the interesting thing about that opinion is it didn't distinguish between the two statutes at all. It held that, or it opined that the rationale for opposing DEA eligibility is the exact same as the rationale for opposing specially adapted housing eligibility. And I think it's very telling that the Secretary still relies on this opinion, even though Kimberlin rejected it over 30 years ago. So I would not say that opinion should be persuasive here. Other than that, I just wanted to bring up very briefly sort of an implication of the Supreme Court decision in Loper-Bright, which sort of changed the analysis that we briefed. We briefed under the old Chambron framework, and that was overturned. So what Loper-Bright tells us is that the court needs to find the best meanings of statutory language, and to do so, it should use every interpretive tool at its disposal. That includes substantive canons of construction, which includes the canon of Brown v. Gardner, that interpretive doubt should be resolved in the veteran's favor. Gardner's place under Chevron was pretty murky. Courts would sometimes place it under the deference owed to an agency. But now that Chevron is overruled, that brings Gardner back to the forefront, I believe, as one of the interpretive tools
that
the court can use.
But we don't have to get into that if we find the statute clear, considering the concurring dissenting opinions in Rudisill, cast some shadow on that. So if we feel like the ice is strong enough to hold us based on the plain meaning of the statute, we don't have to worry about creating cracks by talking about Brown versus Gardner, right?
Correct, Your Honor. And I only bring that up at the very end because Gardner necessarily applies in a situation where you're left with interpretive doubt. So if the court finds itself in that position after looking at the plain language, it still finds doubt about the best meaning, then Gardner can come into play. And Gardner, has not been overruled at this point. It's still good law. So concurrence did not overrule it. And I would note that, even in Kilpatrick, that language of 2101 was found to be ambiguous previously. And so this may be a situation where the interpretive doubt could come into play. But I see my time is up. So if there are no more questions, I will end.
All right, thank you, Mr.
Thank you.
Thanks to everybody. Normally, we come down and greet counsel, but I don't trust myself to walk down the stairs in the long robe here, given that, so we're going to defer that, but shouldn't take that to mean that we didn't like your arguments, that we found them very helpful. And so with respect to that, the case we of Findlay versus